Hello and welcome back to the Rested Culture Podcast. This is episode 57, and it's great to have you all back again today. And today we're going to discuss the Russian investigation and Donald Trump's lack of strategy on Russian hacking. And I believe that's a national crisis, folks, his lack of strategy. And we're going to get into a little bit of that a little bit later on. But I also want to let you know that we're going to be simulcasting this production, this podcast today. It's also going to be available on Facebook. And to get there, all you have to do is go to Facebook and go to Rusted Culture. Put that in the search bar. And as well, we're going to be pushing this out to YouTube. And all of that is going to get us out to a wider audience and continue the message that we'd like to get out. So today, we've got some new developments in terms of the Mueller investigation. There are a few updates, although it's been rather quiet on that front. Bob Mueller and Trump's lawyers continue to grapple with insisting that Donald Trump not interview in person. And Donald Trump's lawyers are pointing to all the information that they've provided Mueller already and are essentially trying to force Mueller to be more specific in terms of what he's looking for. So what they're gaining with this little bit of leverage, they're saying, you know, we'd like to accommodate you, but we've already given you a lot of information and we want you to be more specific. So they're going to gain some information from Mueller is, I think, what their goal is in terms of actually getting Trump there to sit down in person, which ultimately they don't want to do. But they certainly would like to know where Mueller is going with this. And that's the main push right now by Trump's lawyers, is that if you want the big guy, we're going to need more info from you. So, you know, in addition to that, we've also heard a lot of these pundits, you know, come out and say that this is a perjury trap. And it's just confounding to me that by asking a president, you know, to go in front of Bob Mueller in the grand jury, that it's actually becoming a perjury trap. I mean, where else have you heard anything like it? All he has to do is tell the truth, folks. That's all he has to do. That's all Mueller is asking from Donald Trump, is that he tell the truth. And somehow, that is a perjury trap. That's a little bit ridiculous, if you ask me. But in another update, on Tuesday, FBI Director Christopher Wray said to the House Intelligence Committee that I'm not going to discuss the investigation in question with the president, much less provide information from that investigation to him. And Christopher Wray said this at a Senate Intelligence Committee that was, that hearing was held on Tuesday. It's an annual sort of an event where they all get together. And so he's not going to be getting any information from Christopher Wray about the investigation. And what was interesting is that in that meeting, all six directors, folks, all six directors of intelligence agencies or criminal agencies, they all agreed unanimously here, that there should be no doubt that Russia perceived that its past efforts as successful and views the 2018 U.S. midterm elections as a potential target for Russian midterm operations. And Dan Coats, the director of National Intel, had that to say. So Dan Coats is saying that they were successful. They've got every reason to believe that they will be successful in the midterms. And it's up to us to make sure that does not happen. And Dan Coats went on to say that the risk of interstate conflict is higher than any time since the Cold War. The risk of interstate conflict is higher. And that's a surprising statement to make. And keep in mind, you know, folks, keep in mind that these are all appointees by Donald Trump. So Donald Trump, these are his men that are saying this. And I think that we really should step back and listen to what they have to say. And folks, one thing that we should all be concerned about is the fact that this president is pathetically paralyzed. I just don't know how else to put it here. He's pathetically paralyzed in terms of doing something about what the Russians are up to in terms of the election meddling or just even hacking in general. Pathetically paralyzed. You know, the Russians have, they've got an open season on the United States here. They know that they can get in there and they can hack at will because this president has it in his mind that any attempt to discuss Russian meddling diminishes or undermines his election victory. And when you've got that going on, the Russians can just simply hack away and they don't have to worry about any repercussions. And it's a dangerous, dangerous situation. And folks, that mindset that the president has created the perfect storm, in my opinion. And that perfect storm is a direct threat to our national security. I mean, just think about that. That's what scares me the most about this this whole situation is that you have all these intelligence directors that have come together. And they're normally backed up by the President of the United States in what is a battle to prevent our nation from being hacked and our elections from being compromised. But that system is broken at the moment. That system is broken. And all of these intelligence directors were unanimous in saying that they've received no direction whatsoever from the President in terms of a strategy against what Russia's doing and, folks, what they're going to continue to do. There's no direct strategy. There's no coordinated effort that's being led by the president, which I think is sad. So we're powerless at the moment here. We're rudderless. We have no rudder for the first time in our nation's history with a president that cannot come to grips with what the Russians are doing to form a credible defense strategy. It's just leaving us helpless. And I think that came through in that hearing. And it's evidently up to these intelligence directors to hack their way through this on their own, hopefully in a meaningful way that offers credible resistance to what Russia is trying to do. And whether you're a Democrat or Republican, folks, it's not really the issue here. Look at what this president isn't doing right now to protect the USA from the Russians. That should be concerning to every American. So I think let's switch gears to some of what we know about the Russian investigation, folks. And let's paint a picture for a moment here, just a hypothesis, if you will, about how the Trump campaign engineered working with Russia, or at worst, they just simply turned their heads away from what Russia was doing, and they were complicit with how Russia meddled and influenced our election. So let's take a look at that here for a second. So there are two aspects to this Mueller investigation. As we know, that we've got the Russian investigation, then we've got the collusion investigation that's going on. And in the Russian investigation, the goal for Trump was to be elected, and the goal for Putin was to get sanctions relief. Those were the two goals. So the time frame of March 2016 through September of 2016 is really worth looking at. And some of this information I've gleaned from sources like the Washington Post, the New York Times, and CNN, it just comes from every possible credible news source. And I might add, none of it came from Breitbart. So what we've heard recently here, did you hear the other day that Vice President Pence, he said, and I quote him here, "Irrespective of efforts that were made in 2016 by foreign powers, it is the universal conclusion of our intelligence communities that none of those efforts had any impact on the outcome of the 2016 election." I don't believe you. And according to CNN, even as his intelligence chiefs unanimously told a Senate panel Tuesday that Russia meddled in 2016 and is planning to do so again in 2018, three sources that are familiar with the president's thinking said he remains unconvinced that Russia interfered in the presidential election. Unconvinced. And Russia is getting all they ever wanted right now, especially since Trump decided to ignore Congress and not sanction Russia just a couple of weeks ago. And folks, a sanction-free United States, that's all that Russia wanted. And that's exactly what Donald Trump is giving them right now. So while we're waiting for more information to kind of come out of the Mueller investigation, let's take a look at this effort to communicate no sanctions from Donald Trump. And let's look at how this would be pursued by the Trump administration and how this unfolded in 2016. Let's go back to that time frame. And according to the Washington Post, George Papadopoulos, in a document that was unsealed by the FBI on October 27th of 2017, George Papadopoulos admits to having been contacted by Russian agents shortly after being identified as a campaign advisor. And the contacts continued for months. So that's why they're talking to him, as we know. And around this time, Trump orders that the GOP convention platform be changed. He changed the GOP platform from supplying weapons for Ukrainian fighters to only offering general assistance. And that was a major change. And that happened right around the time of the GOP convention in Cleveland. And this change was confirmed by GOP delegate Diana Denman from Texas. And according to her, Trump aide J.D. Gordon told her to make the change, that this is what Trump wanted to do. So this is the beginning of the softening of the stance, folks, the killing of the sanctions against Russia. This is the beginning of it. And according to NPR from February 12th, Papadopoulos' girlfriend also confirmed that George Papadopoulos helped edit Donald Trump's April 2016 foreign policy speech, where Donald Trump said, "I believe in easing of tensions and improved relations with Russia from a position of strength only is possible. Absolutely possible," he says. And that speech is what George Papadopoulos uses as evidence that Trump is softening his stance on Russia. That's the evidence that he uses when he'll be going forward, and we'll talk about that in a second. That's the evidence that he uses, was that speech, that Trump was softening his stance on Russia. So in early of May, in May of 16, George Papadopoulos makes a Trump campaign sanctioned trip to Greece. And while there, George Papadopoulos meets with the Greek defense minister. His name is Panos Kamenos, who also runs the Institute of Geopolitical Studies. So later on May 29th, Putin goes to Athens to meet with Panos Kamenos himself to discuss U.S. sanctions being dropped against Russia. That same day, Panos Kamenos later meets with George Papadopoulos. Sounds a little fishy, doesn't it? So you kind of get the idea here that George Papadopoulos was a perfect messenger, a low-level appearing guy that Trump even called a coffee boy. But his role, folks, was far more critical in this Trump machine. Whenever Trump denigrates someone like that, calling him a coffee boy and trying to push down his status and influence in the campaign, you can just rest assured that that's a clue that you should probably investigate a little bit further. And keep in mind that in May of 16, George Papadopoulos also blabbed to the Australian diplomat that Russia had dirt on Hillary Clinton. That was also in this time frame. So I want you to also to keep in mind that right about, and let's roll it back a year, in September of 2015, the FBI is noticing that one of the DNC computers was being hacked by Russians, and it contacts the DNC IT department describing the hack. This is when the hack really started, going back to September 15th of 2015. So when Papadopoulos blabbed to that Australian diplomat that Russia had dirt on Hillary Clinton, they had that because the hacking started back in September of 2015. So let's go back to June 9th now of 2016. So on June 9th, this is when Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort, and Donald Trump Jr. met with Mrs. Veselnitskaya, who came to them by way of Rob Goldstone and had promised dirt on Hillary Clinton. And supposedly, according to Trump Jr., Veselnitskaya had discussed information she had on Clinton campaign donors in Russia that should not have been donating to the Democratic campaign. supposedly that's what he said was going on, is that she had information on campaign donors that shouldn't have been donating to an American campaign. I don't buy that personally. In fact, Mrs. Veselnitskaya said that wasn't discussed. So she denied what Donald Trump even said. She said that was not even discussed, but she wouldn't elaborate. So that sort of sounds to me like an attempt to kind of dust over the whole meeting, doesn't it? You know, that they discussed something kind of stupid like that. That sounds like an attempt to sort of brush it away, the whole meeting. However, Mrs. Veselnitskaya did bring up the 2012 Magnitsky Act against Russian elite that she wanted dropped. And this sanction, folks, the Magnitsky Act, as it's called, really hurts the Russian elite and their ability to function. And it really puts the crunch on them. And that's what they wanted to get rid of. So that did come through in this meeting, that they wanted to get rid of that 2012 Magnitsky Act. And the meeting ended, according to Trump Jr., who said he wasn't even familiar with the Magnitsky Act. So they, and I mean Jared Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort, thought they were going to get, and along with Jared Kushner, they thought that they were going to get opposition research in that meeting. But in reality, folks, 3 days after that meeting, it all became apparent to them in terms of what they were going to get. It all became crystal clear. And you see what happened on June 12th, 3 days later, in an interview on British TV. Julian Assange of WikiLeaks says that they obtained a batch of Clinton emails that they would soon be publishing. So there comes the information 3 days later. It was abundantly clear to them. It had to be, at that point, what that opposition research was and what they wanted. They wanted that Magnitsky Act gone. They did not want any further sanctions. That was what they wanted. It became abundantly clear in the opposition research that came from that meeting 3 days later was abundantly clear as well. And 2 days later, news of another hack surfaced when hackers working for the Russian government accessed the DNC's computer system, stealing oppositional research on Trump along with staffers' emails and chat exchanges that they had as well. So the hacks just started coming again. And on July 22, 2016, days before the Democratic National Convention, WikiLeaks published 20,000 emails from the DNC server, and even more hacks followed that helped Trump win right up to the election, right up to becoming president. So again, in that June 9th meeting where Veselnitskaya promised opposition research, it all became clear that that dirt on Hillary Clinton was being released automatically by the Russians via WikiLeaks. The best part is the Trumps didn't even have to touch it. They didn't even have to get their hands dirty. The Russians, they did it all for them. That's the beauty of it, folks. It was then clear that the Magnitsky Act, or sanctions relief in general, was what the Kremlin really, really wanted. And in July, Donald Trump was so happy, we all saw this on TV, he was so happy and elated that he stated at a rally, "Russia, if you're listening, I hope you can find the 30,000 missing Hillary Clinton emails." So at this point, let's bring in Carter Page, who on March 21st of 2016, Donald Trump mentioned that Page had become part of his national security team. And according to Slate Magazine, on July 7th and 8th of 2016, Carter Page gives a rambling speech and question and answer on the future of the world economy. And he did this at the World Trade Center in Moscow. The next day, Carter Page gives the commencement address at the New Economic School in Moscow, criticizing U.S. policy towards Russia as too harsh. Too harsh. That would include sanctions, wouldn't it? At both events, Carter Page refuses to comment on whether he would meet with Russian officials. And an intelligence dossier, the one that we all know about, claims that while in Russia, Carter Page met with Igor Seshin, a Putin ally and former Russian deputy prime minister who is now chief executive of Russian oil conglomerate Rosneft. The same dossier claims that he also met Igor Divyakin, who is Putin's deputy chief for internal policy, whom U.S. officials believe was responsible for Russian agencies' intelligence gathering about the 2016 election. And according to that same dossier, Divyakin told Page that he had compromising material on Hillary Clinton. Although Page denies having met with Divyakin, but in 2013, folks, Carter Page claimed to be a Kremlin advisor, going back to 2013. So Carter Page certainly had the contacts, and he certainly knew the people, I think, didn't he? Another fairly low-level kind of guy. But if you're meeting with the Russians, why should you have it be done with a high-level campaign employee? Who better to kind of get under the radar screen than somebody like Page or somebody like George Papadopoulos? Who better? And while Page is in Moscow, Paul Manafort writes his Putin pal Oleg Deripaska on July 7th of 2016 to say if he needs private briefings, we can accommodate. And presumably, I'm thinking that means through Carter, somebody like Carter Page. And according to the Washington Post, less than 2 weeks before Donald Trump accepted the Republican presidential nomination, his campaign chairman offered to provide private briefings on the race to a Russian billionaire closely aligned with the Kremlin, according to people familiar with the discussions. Paul Manafort made the offer in an email to an overseas intermediary, asking that a message be sent to Oleg Deripaska, who's an aluminum magnate with whom Paul Manafort had done business in the past. If he needs private briefings, we can accommodate. And folks, now we also have this Navalny tape, as you recall, that was released on February 8th, just last week, which shows Oleg Deripaska on his yacht in 2016 with Russian Deputy Prime Minister Sergei Prigdoko. And that's a fairly high-ranking person within the Russian government, Russian Deputy Prime Minister. And Deripaska was reporting to Prigdoko on Trump's activities and that Donald Trump has no desire for sanctions. And so that's interesting. So we're seeing the communications lines develop and how the communication is happening. And then we have Attorney General Jeff Sessions, one of my all-time favorites, Jeff Sessions. And first, Jeff Sessions denied having any communications, we all heard this, any communications with the Russians in response to Senator Franken's question during his confirmation hearing for Attorney General. Then all of a sudden in March, after it was revealed that Sessions had met with Kislyak twice on the campaign, he narrowed his denial to not discussing the Trump campaign with Kislyak. Sort of narrowed that a little bit. And old Jeff Sessions said, and I quote him here, "It could have been that in any meeting in my office or at the convention that some comment was made about what Trump's positions were. I think that's possible." Yes, I do too, Jeff Sessions. I think that was possible. And I think you did have some sanction talk there, is my hunch. And folks, then we're moving on to Mike Flynn is the next one that comes up. And Trump's former national security advisor reportedly talked by phone with Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, on December 29th, 2016, the same day that President Barack Obama's administration imposed sanctions on Russia as punishment for its interference in the U.S. presidential election. Mike Flynn requested that Russia not escalate the situation, intonating that Trump did not favor the Obama sanctions. And so at the end of the day, the trade, folks, was for no sanctions on Russia, which brings us full circle to where we are right now. Right to today, where despite Congress passing legislation to sanction Russia, Trump in the last 2 weeks has decided that no sanctions are necessary. So this wraps in with what the intelligence officers said in this week's House intelligence hearing, that Trump is offering no guidance, no credible White House strategy to deal with what Russia has done and will continue to do going forward. It's almost like this, folks. It's almost like the GOP, or Donald Trump, at least, It's as if they think that Russia has become their best friends, and they have no worries. No worries, because Russia will always do their dirty work in terms of swaying elections. Nobody is saying that, but that's what I feel. That's my hunch here. And that's the way the tide seems to be flowing, doesn't it? They're just not willing to do anything about it because Russia's demonstrated in this last election that they'll do the dirty work. And they think it's not traceable back to them. And I want to submit that if Russia is going to be able to sway an election, presumably to the GOP in their favor, it doesn't seem to be something that Trump is really worried about it. It doesn't seem to be anything that, if you want it to go that way, why would you be worried about it? If you wanted their help, why would you be concerned about Russian hacking? But think about that, folks. What kind of country have we become if what should be our choice to fair and democratic elections is compromised by our president's inability to simply act and prevent Russia from interfering in our elections? What kind of America have we become? Where's that cohesive strategy from the White House that brings all of our intelligence resources together to fight what Russia is doing to hack America each and every day? And probably will do into this next election. Where's that strategy? Where's the outrage? Where is that strategy that brings them together to fight what Russia's doing? Where is it? You know, folks, there's no strategy. That's why. There's no strategy whatsoever. And that should trouble any American, regardless of party, the fact that there is no strategy after all of what's happened and continues to happen, and that the collection of our best directors of national intelligence have told us is likely to happen in the next election despite that. There is no strategy. There's nothing being done. And that, my friends, should trouble any American, regardless of whether you're Republican or Democrat or independent, no matter what you are, that should trouble each and every American. I mean, essentially, that's kind of how you would rig an entire election, isn't it? By simply not doing anything about it. You're essentially rigging elections in a way that ultimately helps the GOP in this case. Today, it's the GOP. And this president's, it's a way that has helped the GOP, and not only that, but it's a way that's helped this president's hold on power. If we allow that to happen, folks, if we allow that to happen, we have lost our country at that point to outsiders. We've given it away to outsiders, and we've lost our democracy. You mark my words. At that point, we have lost our democracy. And the very founding fathers that we have that formed this country, they would be outraged at the state of this union at the moment. They would be outraged about what's going on and the inability of our administration to do anything about it. They would be outraged. And folks, you should be too. So that concludes the episode here, folks. I want to welcome you back. And don't forget to check us out. We're going to be on Facebook and we're going to be on YouTube. As always, you can always find us right here in iTunes and tell your friends about us. We're at rustedculture.com, and we encourage your feedback on Facebook. Let us know what you think, and but give that some thought. What kind of America have we become here? And I want to thank you for joining us. Until then, we'll see you next time.